Now we're joined by the experts at ETF Trends and ETF Database, the world's largest independent ETF-centric source for top industry news, trends, and insights.
There's a couple of different ways to slice and dice these various ETFs. They can hold what are called total return swaps. Expect the unexpected.
Laura, thanks for joining me this week.
I'm so glad to be here.
Well, look, last time you were on, we talked Bitcoin, right? Which clearly means we have to talk ESG this week. Although I will say I have a little surprise for you later, which I think you'll like. But let's start high level with ESG ETF flows, and then we can certainly drill into some other areas. So look, we are just past the midway point of the year. Obviously, ETFs as a whole are already nearing their annual record, which will likely, you know, they'll obliterate that. But give us a rundown on ESG ETFs. Are they on record pace as well?
Yes and no. So on the one hand, we are seeing brisk inflows into ESG ETFs so far for the year. I ran the numbers this morning. It looks like we're up to about $23 billion in new net inflows for ESG ETFs for the year. And that's pretty good, right? When I first started covering ESG ETFs a few years ago, it was considered a good year if these funds brought in $5 billion, right? So if we keep pace, or if we keep up with the pace we're on, we're probably on track to see about maybe $45 to $50 billion in new cash for the space. Now, that said, we're actually a little bit behind last year. Last year, ESG ETFs brought in $89 billion in new net inflows, which is the most that they had ever brought in. So some of that slowdown is probably because of the just general cool-off in the sector, right? So optimism was running pretty hot in the lead-up and the weeks following Biden's election, and that lifted clean energy stocks to the stratosphere. There's been somewhat of a pullback in clean energy since, a resurgence in kind of the traditional fossil fuel prices as the economy has reopened. Crude's up to, what, 74 a barrel now? So some of that optimism has not waned, but maybe come back to earth, come back to rational levels. And as a result, some of the performance chasing that you saw in the flows into ESG ETFs, that's, you know, tempered, it's petered out, it's reversed course a bit.
One question I have here on ESG ETF flows, I'm curious, is there any way to parse organic retail flows versus institutional demand or the bring your own assets? It just seems like there's always talk of flows into these products, I think especially in the broader base stuff. But I just wonder if it's all BlackRock model portfolios or pensions seed in these ETFs. I mean, you look this year, the top ETF launch is that BlackRock U.S. Carbon Transition Readiness ETF, ticker LCTU. But my understanding is the bulk of the assets in that ETF came from the California Teachers Retirement System. I'm just curious, is there any way to drill down to see, you know, whether this is grassroots demand or is it all institutional?
You know, that's a really good question. And trade data is anonymous, right? You can't ever really know, you know, barring 13F filings, which are reported on a quarterly delay, you can't really know who is buying a given ETF at any given time. Now, that said, there are some pretty strong clues that give us an indication of which ETFs are being purchased or being invested in for model portfolios and for institutional, by institutional clients for model portfolios. And like you said, many of the biggest flows getting ETFs year to date have been funds that are in model portfolio situations like the BlackRock ETFs. We're seeing most of the biggest flows attractors being these replacement style funds, these core asset allocation ETFs in broad US large caps and developed market stocks, you know, these broad asset allocation funds with just a few light ESG screens, right? These are ESG for investors who don't want anything too radical. They're there to replace or supplement existing core exposures. They hug benchmarks pretty closely. They provide the same basic return in sector exposures as, you know, your vanilla funds. And they're good for model portfolio usage. Now, that said, we do have sort of concept album style standouts. We've got the iClean, that's ticker iClean, that's the iShares Global Clean Energy ETF. That one's taken in $3 billion in new net cash. A slew of other clean energy ETFs as well, you know, kind of skinned on the same theme. There's WisdomTree, their XSOE, that's the ticker for their governance-screened emerging markets ETF that doesn't have exposure to state-owned enterprises. It's, you know, taken in $1.5 billion in new net money year to date. It's offers a much different exposure for the emerging market space than what's currently on the market in the vanilla side of things. So there are a few breakout stars, I guess, but you know, to your point, by and large, most of what is bringing in the flows has been these model portfolio core asset allocation funds.
You began to allude to this earlier, but when you look at flows perhaps being a little bit lighter this year, maybe not that record pace, I'm curious what impact you think performance is having. So obviously we saw this rotation towards value earlier this year. Tech was a laggard, though that's reversed recently. You know, I wonder if maybe the tech underperformance impacted ESG ETFs at all, since they do tend to overweight this sector. If you want to get into the clean energy ETFs, obviously those were all the rage last year. You mentioned ICLN, the iShares Global Clean Energy ETF. You could look at PBW, the Invesco Wilder Hill Clean Energy ETF. I think even TAN, right, the Invesco Solar ETF. Those were all just huge, some of the top-performing ETFs. But if I look this year, they're all trailing the S&P 500 by like 30 percentage points. Just high level, I mean, what impact do you think performance is having on flows here?
I think it has a lot to do with it. You know, this many clean energy ETFs, like you said, are deeply in the tech sector, which also tends to be kind of a growthier space. It leans more towards growth. And so we've seen this rotation towards value this year as well. So I don't think that's helped either. But there's also another factor, too, that I think sometimes gets overlooked when we're talking about clean energy ETFs specifically. And that is that there's a fundamental commodity pricing issue here. Alternative energy prices are connected to fossil fuel prices in a way that I'm not sure many investors still or yet internalize. Because, you know, if you look at last winter when clean energy ETFs were running through the roof, you know, that was even as oil and gas prices were still in a crunch, right? And that didn't necessarily make a ton of sense because, you know, from a supply-demand perspective, clean energy is generally helped by high oil and gas prices because the more it costs to buy a barrel of oil, then the better a kilowatt hour that's generated by solar or wind or hydroelectric is going to look. So there's more incentive there for companies to switch to a lower or zero emissions energy source when oil prices are high, or to engage in carbon allowances, right? And to use that market as well. So we're starting to see energy prices come back to you know, a higher level, to a new normal level maybe. At the same time, optimism in clean energy is starting to be tempered back with reality. And so you're starting to see the supply-demand fundamentals, I guess, reach up or match up with each other again, I think.
Laura, briefly, before we get to the little surprise I have for you, what are your expectations for ESG ETFs moving forward, just in terms of investor uptake? And I know you and I have kind of been around on this topic plenty of times in the past, but I mean, are you still generally optimistic on the prospects for ESG ETFs?
I am generally optimistic. I think my perspective on which funds are going to see the flows and are going to take up investor assets has changed. And I'll tell you why. Because, you know, as we discussed before, model portfolio ETFs, the ETFs that slot really nicely into those core asset allocation models, those clearly have been the most attractive ones. The pockets of maybe the more interesting spaces where ESG might actually provide a real concrete value, I'm not seeing as much uptick there, right? Like, for example, fixed income. So we're seeing fairly anemic year-to-date flows into ESG bond ETFs. And I find that really interesting because almost everyone you talk to says fixed income is a space that really cries out for an ESG approach, where the idea of digging deep into corporate governance and climate change risk and, you know, all of these ESG factors could be of real concrete use to investors. However, this continues to be a place where assets just really aren't accumulating yet, outside of, again, a handful of iShares products that are being used in these model portfolios. And, you know, in this particular case, I think maybe it might have less to do with the ESG products themselves and more to do with sort of a general disinterest in fixed income this year between rate risk and really low yields. And you talk to advisors almost to a person, they say, why would I put my clients in bonds right now, right? An ESG take just doesn't solve that problem. That said, you know, I would be interested to see if this changes as the environment for bonds improves, when it improves, because we know it will eventually. I don't know. I don't know if that's ever going to be a theme that takes off. I'm keeping my eye on that pretty closely.
No, I think all that's well said. And I'll just add that I do think education across the space is still lacking. I think investors have a lot of confusion in terms of what they're actually getting with some of these ESG products, and that they can't make heads or tails of the different options on the market. And so I think more, you know, we can debate the merits of an ESG approach, but at the end of the day, investors have to understand what they're investing in. And I'm not so sure that we've, you know, made the progress that we need there on that front. So
completely agree.
In any event, so with the remaining time, I told you I had a little surprise for you. And while we're on this topic of ESG and clean energy, guess what? I'm going to pivot to Bitcoin. Your head's going to explode.
I knew you'd do it.
So look, there is this Verity Clean Energy Crypto Mining and Infrastructure ETF that's set to launch, I believe, any day now. And this will obviously compete with the growing number of blockchain ETFs out there, which I'm not going to get started down that path in terms of why all those exist. However, I am curious, do you think a product like this will resonate with investors? Do you think they want this?
So I'm of two minds, right? So there are already four blockchain ETFs on the market and two others that were around that have already closed. It's kind of a tough thing to be a seventh mover in such a narrow space, especially with one that has already cleared, or that has a fund that has already cleared kind of its orbit, right? Block is a $1 billion fund at this point, and its next nearest competitor, BLCN, it's, you know, not even close to the same size. You know, I'm always happy to see, you know, new ideas and, you know, I wish them the best of luck. You know, let me say this. I think there is a value towards taking a greener take on crypto mining and the cryptocurrency space in general. You know, you've seen the same reports I have, right? Crypto mining constitutes a real percentage of the global emissions profile out there. And we are supposed to be reducing our emissions, not increasing them. So, and Bitcoin isn't the same. Bitcoin mining isn't the same thing as, say, oil exploration, right? A government can tell, say, Exxon or BP to reduce its emissions profile, or Exxon can decide it themselves, or they could have a board takeover where it's decided for them, right? In the case of Exxon. But Bitcoin mining is decentralized. It's a global affair. There is nobody there to inform that they have to reduce emissions. There's no standardization in how mining activity occurs. It's done by individuals. It's done in small groups with no coordination or little coordination. So how are you going to force thousands, tens of thousands of Bitcoin miners to reduce their emissions? You can't. Literally, the only way you can do that is by changing, it is through, I guess, the open market, right? So there is a PR issue here. Bitcoin is and crypto mining and crypto assets are shouldering this mantle as kind of the new crude oil, I guess, you know, that's killing the planet. So that's obviously an image that crypto enthusiasts want to avoid. And I know that there are several, I know of several large investors and large asset management firms that won't even touch crypto because they are concerned about this environmental issue. So, you know, if Aridi thinks that they've got a skin on this, that's going to present a cleaner approach to Bitcoin that, you know, investors will find more palatable, maybe they really do have a shot here.
Well, and I think it'll be interesting to see if this factors into the physical Bitcoin ETF race at all, right? I know you're aware there's this filing, the One River Carbon Neutral Bitcoin Trust. So this will hold Bitcoin, but then use these tokenized carbon credits to try and offer carbon neutral exposure to Bitcoin. And I've heard O'Shares Kevin O'Leary, he's talked a lot about Bitcoin mining. He actually said he doesn't own random ETFs with blood coin in them, obviously a reference to blood diamonds. I do wonder if O'Shares might throw their hat in the Bitcoin ETF ring at some point. But, you know, this could be interesting because it is certainly a way to differentiate what's going to be, without question, a brutally competitive segment of ETFs, whether we want to talk about the blockchain ETFs or obviously the physical Bitcoin ETF space is going to be highly competitive. I think that's interesting. Something else I want to point out before I let you go, I'm not sure if you saw this, but Bloomberg's Eric Balchunas mentioned on Twitter last week that with this Viridi ETF, it looks like the SEC might have made them drop ESG from their name. So this was originally filed as the Viridi ESG, I can't remember, you know, crypto mining and infrastructure ETF, and they made them change it to clean energy. And, I thought to myself, I'm not really sure what the distinction is here. You know, I looked, there are, 80 ETFs with ESG in their name. It's like, what's the difference? I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, we know that the SEC has been fairly touchy about crypto ETFs and crypto adjacent ETFs. And now they're getting more careful about the usage of ESG as well. We're seeing that they've made or they're planning on making ESG disclosures and nomenclature a priority in the coming year. So I'm not too surprised about that. It's sort of that move makes sense to me. One thing I wanted to say about One River and their filing, I think it's really interesting that they're using the carbon offset program. Nothing is different about the way that they are holding Bitcoin, about how the Bitcoin's being mined. Nothing has changed. They're just using those carbon offsets to sort of, they're going to buy shares of a forest or some other carbon sink to offset the emissions coming from the Bitcoin mining. And carbon trading is a really fascinating market with its own structural issues, perception issues, and but it's one that's sort of taken off. Look at the Crane Shares carbon trading ETF, KRBN. It's taken in hundreds of millions of dollars this year alone. This is an idea, the right idea for the right time. So is carbon trading, is that a realistic solution to the greening of crypto mining? I don't know, but it is a start. So, it is an indication that folks realize there's an issue here. There's a perception issue here, and they're trying to address it. So,
well, maybe we'll see that One River Bitcoin ETF in like 2025 or 2030 at the pace the SEC's on. Laura, excellent stuff this week. Fun chatting. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me on.
That was ETF Trends, Laura Krieger.